Welcome to Mediocre from Minnesota, a podcast with two mediocre men from Minnesota talking about mediocre things with seemingly mediocre guests who are anything but mediocre. Be sure to follow and like Mediocre from Minnesota on your preferred podcast app, and you can also find us on Facebook and Instagram. Joining us this week is Nathan Bohr. Nathan's a professional tile setter and a self-proclaimed lifestyle action sports enthusiast. Welcome, Nathan, and thanks for joining us.
Hey, thanks for having me. Appreciate it.
Right on.
So, Nathan, normally our guests don't bring us a bunch of treats and gifts, but you came prepared.
Yeah.
And you mentioned before we started recording that you had listened to one of our first episode, I believe.
Yep, first episode with you and Sam. And, you know, I always like to get to know things.
Yep.
You know, read the instructions before you start.
I throw those instructions directly in the garbage.
Oh, yeah. I look at one image of it, and I think I know it. I go backwards about 10 times.
That's our male instinct.
Yeah, seriously. Yeah,
I know how to do this.
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, it's so bad. I was just doing, what the hell? Oh, when our daughter had gotten a Barbie camping thing, and it was like a tent. It was a simple tent to put together. And it took me like half an hour because I kept just skipping the instructions and I'd have to go back and take it apart to do it the right way.
That's great. Our kids are at the same age, so we can talk about this stuff and I can correlate or I can relate so much. So, yeah, I understand.
So what'd you bring for us?
So, yeah, and this is a little token. Being a tile setter, John has gave me some business, so we really appreciate that. And this is a token for that, but it's also something that you guys might be able to share.
What the heck is it?
In the future with another guest, I was thinking, because you had mentioned you need guests. And I have a good friend from high school who does forging.
Oh, yeah.
And her business is called Chick of the Woods.
Here, got a chicken. Oh, like Chicken of the Woods, but a lady.
How clever is that?
Yeah, that is actually pretty clever. I like that.
It is. And she really, you know, it's just, you see how passionate she is through her business, and she's a great chick that loves what she does, and it's
cool
shows. So she just had a fair sale over the holidays, and I picked these up for you, John. And listening to John's story about his love for morels,
oh yeah, some dehydrated morels.
Oh, yes, that's it.
Hells yeah.
And getting sick off mushrooms one time. Just don't get sick off those ones.
Oh no,
but these are good from her. So
awesome, cool, thanks.
Yeah,
appreciate
you're welcome
it.
You're Holy welcome cow. Yeah, I thought it was really cool that she...
That's like...
I bet that's like
$35, $40 worth of dehydrated mushrooms. Those things are so expensive.
For those of you listening, it's a mason jar full.
Oh, yeah, sorry.
Dehydrated morels.
Just like a pint. That's a pint jar, right?
Yeah.
Yep. Pint jar.
I grabbed one morels. For you and one for myself. I'm looking forward to using it.
What does one do camping with dehydrated morels?
Just basically reconstitute them. So just like let them soak in water for a little bit and then, use them as you normally would. I did dehydrate one. Was it a morel? I think I did. Yep, I did do morels 1 year. But now I say screw it. I'm eating them all as I get them.
Yep.
You don't get enough. Right. If I got, 50 pounds of them, well, then you got it, because what are you going to do with them? But
right.
Mm-hmm.
I don't have a problem getting rid of them.
But it was really cool to hear you like that, something I'm getting into, and then you're taking your kids, and that's something I want to do with my daughter. And we dabble, but we're not experts, and that's where my friend comes in, and I thought, well, how cool to take a course with her and go out and try it. So
heck yeah.
Something I've been wanting to do with my family, and I'd like to share it with others. So yeah, Chick of the Woods.
Chick really of the cool. Woods, chickofthewoods.com.
Yeah, yeah.
Well, we'll have to... Reach out to her. Where she live? Where's she from?
Out of Jordan, and I believe the business.
The country or the?
Sorry,
the city in Minnesota. Because I don't know if she's gonna come over here for that.
Down by the river. Yeah, there could be some good mushrooms in Jordan, though.
Oh, probably. Yeah, probably some great ones. We'll have to. I'll reach out or.
Yeah, I brought a business card to give.
Perfect. Yeah. She was prepared.
Yeah. Yeah. So I thought you might enjoy those.
Yeah, did you do any foraging as a kid? Any mushroom hunting?
Well, we did, and that's where my interest came from.
Okay, cool.
Yeah, it was not much, but just morels and finding them behind our house and things like that.
Did you grow up with some land that you guys were able to, or just?
Just out in the country. I grew up over in Hollywood, Minnesota. So I'm from.
Oh, big time, Hollywood.
Yeah, home. People, you always tell people, like, California? No. Actually, Hollywood, Minnesota.
How many people?
Oh my gosh, I don't even know the population.
30?
Yeah.
35.
There's a bowling alley there, isn't there?
Bowling alley, sports complex.
The sports complex.
It's pretty freaking huge.
So I grew up a stone's throw away from the Hollywood Sports Complex. Awesome. Yeah, great place. I'm not sure who runs it now, but grew up playing volleyball and going to the bowl and
softball,
hang out, play softball. There. Yeah, it's a nice community. I guess the biggest fame Hollywood would have would be the Jayhawks, their band.
Never heard of them.
Never heard of them. Okay, no worries. No,
that's fine.
And they were driving through a coach out in front of the old Township Hall and just made the album they had at that time called Hollywood Township Hall with a cover of it. So we always thought that was interesting.
Oh, funny.
Yeah.
Were they like a national band?
They were a national band from California. They traveled through kind of like a Gear Daddies kind of thing back in the 90s.
Okay.
Yeah, I'm old.
So that was like your prime time.
Yeah, I'm 44, so this not music I really listen to, but like Crash Test Dummies, things like that. So I think it was around the 90s,
gotcha.
Somewhere around there. Yeah, yep.
So kind of led us right into our first topic that we wanted to chat about, starting at the beginning, starting at the childhood. You just want to kind of just share a little bit about your upbringing, if you had any siblings, kind of family dynamics. Sam must have found
it. Sorry, I found it. Jayhawks, 1992. See if it'll come through.
That's the
am I picking
that's
you
the
up?
Hollywood Township Hall. I believe it's still standing there. And just south of that is the new Carver County utility shed that was
Nathan's
Erosion Control. Yeah. And they sold it to the county. Yep. Yeah. Those are some cousins.
The album cover is the town hall.
Yes, that's the town hall. So as John just asked, that's where I grew up, right there in Hollywood Township. And my dad used to grade the roads for the county and was part of the county. I remember riding in the grader with him, bringing my bike to the gravel pits.
Nice.
Bombing down like big hills and stuff on like this banana seed bike. Just, you know, just having fun. But that's where I grew up. It's a great place. Heartland of Minnesota. Mm-hmm. Yeah, it's really, really nice community. It's very small, but it's just like Hutchinson in a way. Just, you know, it's just the county. Mm-hmm. Or the outskirts, yeah.
So what was it like growing up in such a small town?
Well, it was good. I went to Watertown Mayor. It's the closest town to where we live for the school district, and just small town living. Yeah, yep. Country living. We didn't grow up on a farm. We had like a hobby farm, so that was really fun. But a lot of my family were dairy farmers, and it was a great place to grow up. I mean, I couldn't imagine a different. You know, everybody has their idea of growing up, but I love where I grew up, and I love my parents. I just had the best upbringing there. It was just wonderful. Yeah, it was
right on.
A really cool place to grow up. I moved out to Oregon in my 20s, instead of going to college, and pursued a sport called kiteboarding. And, you know, coming back to Minnesota, you can just appreciate where you're from.
Yeah.
I love Minnesota. It's a great state, and listening to your podcast and all the people from Minnesota, and just, you know, we all got so much in common. The North Shore, the love of our state, you know, listening to some of the last one about a friend of yours that did the geologist, and just the rocks, and you had a rock hound on here, some girl that was a rock hound.
Yeah.
I'm a I'm a dabbler in rock hound.
Oh, geez.
Yeah. I like to do that.
So. I do like to find rocks as well.
Yeah.
It's so fun to just like randomly come across something that, especially, I think it's more fun not knowing what things are, because then I can like say, like, oh, this is really special, even though somebody who's done it a bunch probably is like, no, it's not. It's just a regular one. Any brothers or sisters?
Yeah, I'm the youngest of three. I have two older brothers, Shannon and Justin. Just again, like my parents, I just had the greatest. I have the greatest oldest brothers. Examples.
They beat the crap out of you.
Beat
too,
the
or
crap
no?
out of me. He tortured me and all that fun
oh,
stuff.
Yeah.
Oh yeah,
that's part of it.
Yeah,
swirlies.
Yeah. Were you the youngest in your family?
Unfortunately.
Yeah.
And by far the smallest. So
yeah, that's
not a good combo.
Yeah. Never helps. Were you three too?
Yep.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, two older brothers. Yeah.
Two older brothers. Yep. Yeah, I think I remember that. Yeah, we each have that in common, yeah. So, yeah, my parents, my mom worked at Ridgeview Medical in Waconia. My dad worked for the county, like I said, put himself through college, got his master's in psychology, and started working at our local high school as a social studies teacher, but then he ended up retiring from North Hennepin Community College, dean of counseling over there, and
Nice.
Yeah, my whole family's from Brooklyn Park in that area, but
My your dad's side and your mom's side?
My dad and my mom's side. So that's where they grew up. Yep. But their parents, that's where they moved to. But my great-grandparents, that's what's kind of cool about my mom and dad. They went back to the heartland and moved out of the city and brought us to that country. And that's what I really love. I was born at home in a blizzard, couldn't get to the hospital. My grandmother was a wave in World War II.
What the heck's a wave?
Wave is like a volunteer nurse.
Okay.
Best way I could put it from what I understand. And I don't think she could quite, or no, I think she helped deliver me more. Because the, what's the nurse help my?
Midwife?
Midwife couldn't get there because of the blizzard on time. So grandma's, helping, deliver me. So
unreal.
So that's, born in a blizzard right in Hollywood, Minnesota.
And I would hope your mom's mom, right?
My dad's.
It was your dad's mom?
Yeah, it was my dad's
mom.
Unreal. Yeah. So that's kind of cool. But born right there at home in Hollywood, Minnesota. And it's just a great place. I like it. I got a lot of family still back there, but it's a nice area.
So you mentioned that when you were 20, you took off and pursued what sport?
I pursued the sport of kiteboarding. We grew up close to Lake Waconia in Watertown, Minnesota, there in Mare, where I grew up in Hollywood. And Lake Waconia is a bigger lake. And it's avidly used for sailing. And in the 80s, it became really popular with windsurfing. And so like windsurfing, kiteboarding in the late 90s, early 2000s, mainly kind of late 2000s, became popular. And Lake Waconia is our biggest body of water close to Minneapolis. So people congregate there and the community gathers there to go kiteboarding. And it's just a really cool sport. It's just unique and it takes lessons. And it's just that, it's not like that grab and go thing.
What's the equipment? What are you using?
It's a big parachute basically that's like a one skin kite.
Okay.
Like the best way to describe it, because most canopies or parachutes or wing sports you see have a double skin kite that's like an open parachute and has open cells in the front where the air goes in and deploys. Like you see a parachuter jump and they deploy their parachute. Well, the gravity is pulling them down and it's fixed on a bridle. And that bridle is fixed to the canopy in all these different positions where it holds its shape. And the air goes in the front of the wing and deploys the whole wing. And that's how all wings and kites take their shape. And so really what kiteboarding is a wing sport, a professional air wing sport.
Mm-hmm. Nice. Yeah. And then you're on just like a surfboard, a snowboard type thing?
Here in Minnesota, what's really cool is we do a sport called snow kiting. And so me as a whatever, quote unquote, professional, I always joke around with my friends. They're always like, oh, you were a pro kiteboarder. I'm like, I lived on peanut butter and jelly sandwiches and ramen out of my van for years. And all I, I didn't make any money. And, I'm a little far behind in life compared to my others that went to college, but I sure had fun and I can tell those stories now. And I'm glad I did it when I was young because it's not something I'd do when I was older.
Yeah.
And your question.
So were you good though?
I was okay.
I was
like a pioneer, I had a lot of fun with it. I loved snowboarding here, and I crossed those two together.
Yeah.
And so that's where my forte really came in snow kiting. I was a pioneer in snow kiting. People say, oh, you're a professional. Yeah, sure, I was a professional, but I became a professional instructor.
Okay.
And I became a professional, just sharing my love and passion with the sport. There's not much professionalism in it when I was in it because there's just still it's a very small sport. I was just talking with a friend today from Utah who's calling me about some new kites he's working with, and there's not even any events in North America anymore that we were doing 10 years ago, and we were traveling the whole United
States.
So pretty small. Yeah. We were all traveling the whole United States together, going from state to state for years, and now there's like nothing. So it's kind of one of those sports that's just, like I was saying, it's kind of hard to grasp. It's not on the shelf. You kind of need that assistance if you haven't had that education.
Mm-hmm. So, it's not something that you could just, now maybe you watch a bunch of videos and learn that way. But when you were growing up, that wasn't available. You had to have somebody show you, basically.
Yeah, correct. And like everything in life, it's always changing. And so it's evolved. And the gear has evolved to where it's more user-friendly and self-sufficient to where when I was learning.
Just piecing it together.
Yeah, there was a lot of,
grabbing a blue tarp from the garage and some nylon rope.
Lucky
and
I'm still here. Yeah, so it was a lot of figuring out. Yeah, but that's the fun part of it too.
So, was, you mentioned bombing a banana bike down a gravel, you know, hill or whatever. And now this, I mean, is that something that you've always been into? Just like, not, say extreme sports, but, you know, I guess more extreme than basketball or baseball.
Yeah. And, you know, we talked about my age. I grew up kind of in that heart of the 80s. So skateboarding and BMXing was just like at its climax, getting big, and certain movies like Rad.
Oh, or yeah. There's one BMX movie, I don't remember what it was, watch, and then you get all like amped up watching it, and then like I'd think I could go and do something, and I could barely handle a little mound of dirt.
yeah.
But I suck at everything, so it's one of those. You on the other hand sound like you actually excelled at these things.
Well, you know, I fake it till you make it, you know.
You must have been coordinated though, somewhat, right?
I guess. Yeah, I'm a bigger guy, so a lot of accidents, because you know, the bigger you are, the harder they fall. I'm a little top heavy too. But
were you big growing up too?
I was big growing up. I played football. I would have been a little more academically inclined, I probably could have played football for I think it was Morehead State. But yeah, I loved football and baseball, and like most kids, I loved sports growing up, or you know. And so but something in the 80s grabbed me with skateboarding and snowboarding. Okay. And I thought, oh, that's just something I want to do. And probably growing up in a cornfield, not getting any experience like that.
Yeah.
Yeah. Skateboarding was pretty something I really liked to try and never was really good at. And it was probably the hardest thing I've ever tried in my life.
Yeah.
So it's just something I like to get better at. Like anything, you know, you want to try to get better at. And two hardest things I've ever tried for board sports in my life have been skateboarding and surfing, you know, most humbling sports, definitely.
Oh, yeah.
Without a doubt.
Mine was snowboarding.
Yeah.
I cannot figure it out.
I don't even try it.
Yeah.
I just go skiing.
Yeah, I tried it once, and then I think maybe I tried for an hour. I said, screw this, and I got some skis, and I had fun. I don't get it. And I think I tried wakeboarding one time, too. Nope. I can't do it.
it's a learned thing, and some people get a knack right away. But you know, it's like anything; like it just takes time.
Well, and then we were you with us? Yeah, when we were down in Iowa over the summer. Wake surfing, right?
Yep.
Oh, fun. Yeah. Wake surfing's so fun.
If you can get up,
right? Our wives and their sisters or whatever. It was like.
Yeah, like
I think Beth did it on her first freaking try, or was Katie or whatever. Yeah,
got it on her first
It was just
try.
Like they had never done before. Oh, let me try. Yeah. Oh, and then they just did it.
Yeah, and then I'll try it 15 times and eat water the entire time.
Yeah, oh, well, fun.
And, you know, you're adding a whole other dynamic. You got the boat pulling you, and now you got to figure out that leverage how to get up before you're even riding the board.
Yeah. Right.
Yeah, it was whatever. Digressing, but
I did a lot of wakeboarding, so that was something fun too. And I know what you're talking about. How it's just that barrier. But, you know, once you get it, it's just like, yeah.
That's what they say. That's what they tell you. But if you don't ever get it, then you don't get it. So that's the only problem with that notion.
Yes.
Did you have like a little ramp system that you built at home for bikes or for skateboards? Or
We got kind of lucky out in the country. I had some great uncle that had dug a old schoolhouse and didn't put it in to the earth, and so there's this hole with all these mounds next to it that just kind of, you know, dissipated over time.
Okay.
And it was out in a pasture, and cows, if you've ever seen cow trails, they make these trails everywhere. So
it's like a dirt bike.
Believe it or not, I was riding single track cow trails since I was 5 years old.
Single track cow trails, I love it.
I mean, it's the truth. I mean, these were packed down single track cow trails, and we were BMXing on these out to this BMX course. It was hollowed out hole that had these gaps and berms and just this bowl. It was just perfect. So at this young age, we were just like, me and my brothers and friends. Yeah, it was fun.
Do you remember your first BMX bike was? Do you remember what brand?
Dino.
Oh, yeah, Dino. Dino. Yep. Silver?
Green.
Green.
Lime green.
Lime green Dino. Yeah.
Lime green Dino.
Sick.
Cool.
Yeah.
Did it have the, was it called like the gyro
in the front.
On the handlebars?
Right,
yeah.
Oh, yeah.
The front, so you could spin it around.
Yeah.
Yeah. Because if you didn't, your brake lines, that wasn't was good. I don't even know how the hell did that work.
I don't think I ever got into that.
No, never got into that?
Yeah.
Was it just the speed
for you? Yeah, just the speed and trying to do jumps.
Yeah,
no, okay. Jumping.
Not doing, like, the kick flips and
no,
back flips and stuff.
Bike, no. Yeah. No. No. But yeah, I liked biking, and that was fun.
You mentioned you have kids. Do they partake in these really fun sports?
I live vicariously through my 17-year-old. Oh, I love it. Absolutely. Yeah.
What does he do? Or the, she?
He. Yeah. So we have a, thank you, sorry. We have a 17-year-old and a 4-year-old, so a little dynamic there. Uh-huh. It's really fun. And our 17-year-old son, he loves biking. He's been jumping since he's been little, and we always build little jumps and take him. Growing up, we'd take him to indoor places for his birthdays. He'd love that. In the Minneapolis where they have like ramps and
like skate parks or something.
Yeah, but for biking.
Oh, okay.
I can't remember the name of them now.
I don't know.
It was in Northeast, but we'd take them there every year. It was really fun.
Cool.
Yeah.
So at what point did you kind of push some of that aside and be like, I probably shouldn't be doing this anymore?
Well,
Or do you still do it?
I still do it. I just live vicariously through him. And now, you know, we were talking, I just don't take it to that extreme anymore, mm-hmm. or whatever you call it, and just have fun. And yep. That's what's great about these sports is, and as I mentioned, I became an instructor, is anybody can do it. It doesn't have to be this extremeness or you know, this complicated, and anybody
can you called it lifestyle action sports. Your coined term. Is that trademarked?
I call them action sports, but they really are lifestyle action sports because it's a lifestyle for a lot of people. And people base their lives around surfing and kite surfing and windsurfing that I know.
Yeah.
And, you move to an area because there's a beach there that has wind on it and it's perfect for your sport. Or it has the best waves.
Yep.
Or we're going to Costa Rica and we're going to live there. I have a lot of friends who have done that.
That's wild.
It is so wild. There's a lot of transplants from Minnesota, believe it or not, that I've met through these sports or just know through.
Is it something about those sports specifically that make people? Because, right, like.
I think so.
Yeah. Well, but it's supposed to, some of that has to do with, like, nature, right? Whereas, like, baseball, well, you can go to. Yeah. They got a baseball field over there. They got a baseball field over there. So you play wherever, but these sports rely on
recreation,
other factors,
and having fun, putting a smile on your face. And I mean, Hawaiians made surfing for having fun and recreation, and now there's competitions. One thing I say to my daughter in life, and she's always like, first, you know, kids, first one there, it's a race, this or that. And I always say, you know, life's not a race. It's about who's having the most fun. Well, you're doing it.
Heck yeah.
You know, and that it's just so true. Even if you're doing something to an extreme, you know, Lance Armstrong, whomever, if you're not having fun while you're doing it, if you don't love it, what's the point?
Yep.
If you're passionate and you're trying to show people that you're passionate about it.
Did you get some of that sentiment from your parents? Did they pass that along to you? Or is that just something that you've kind of developed over the years as far as that attitude towards life and, you know,
some
of these sports?
100% from my parents and my grandparents.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
Anything good in me is from them. My grandparents.
Well, where's all the bad stuff from?
Yeah, I know. Right? Well, we'll get into that. No, I could. That's a whole other topic. No, but... I think so. I think it's from that, and having that integrity is something that is yeah.
Yeah. I know just because you had brought it up, oftentimes I'll reach out to guests before and just like, you know, anything they want to talk about, anything specific that they'd like to highlight. And Nathan brought up politics and religion. I told him, no fucking way, we're not hitting it. No, I didn't tell him that, but I said, yeah, if it's something that was a part of your life growing up, yeah, we're more than happy to chat about it. So just wanted to give you an opportunity to just kind of expand upon that. And if there's anything that, you know, made a big mark in your life growing up that you'd like to talk about.
Yeah, well, the reason, and that was via text, we were texting. And, you know, the reason I said it is things could come up with religion or politics because of my family and where I come from. And it's Hollywood, Minnesota. And I come from baby boomers and my parents' families. My great aunts and my great uncles. So my parents' aunts and my parents' uncles. Yep. And just how the lineage of my family, that bloodline. And coming from Hollywood, the McDonald's, my grandma.
Ronald?
McDonald.
Oh.
So just north of the Hollywood complex is McDonald's farm.
Oh, yep.
The homestead there. Not sure if you've ever been by the old green It's an old combine that used to get pulled by horses, and it says Old McDonald's Farm on it. There's a stone hedge on the four corners of the road there at County 21 and 20, I think it is, but it's an old replica of the Celtic stone hedges.
Oh, really?
Ireland.
Oh, shit. Just head over there. Check it out. Yeah.
Check it out.
Yeah.
So it's really cool.
Aliens build those two or no?
The aliens built that. I love it.
September 08.
Yeah. Perfect.
So
sorry, we're idiots.
No, I love it. No, it's good. It's good. I love that stuff. That's another thing I wanted to ask you guys about.
No, you don't ask us questions. Yeah. We ask you questions.
No. Bigfoot and your two.
That's my nickname.
No. Your two conspiracies. So I'm going back to the show I listen to. Oh, they learn about John and they learn about Sam, or just their first one, and their two conspiracies they kind of talked about.
What did we talk about?
I don't remember.
Bigfoot and then
Cthulhu?
The reason I wanted to ask Sam.
Chupacabra?
The reason I wanted to ask.
No, what's that little bastard from.
Barracuda.
No.
From
South Africa.
South Africa.
Damn it. What was that thing?
I don't know.
Creepy as hell.
Call it.
Anyway, yeah. All right, where is this going?
Well, the reason I was Sam's, I actually believe what Sam was talking about, so maybe I believe in conspiracies.
Was
maybe,
it the
maybe I'm a conspiracy.
Younger Dryas impact theory? No?
No.
Because I believe in that.
Yeah.
Well.
No, go ahead.
No, I think you had said just about the Earth being older than it is.
Oh, yeah.
And glaciers and things like that and some of the stuff. I think you got into some Graham Hancock stuff. But I'm all full on board with that stuff. So if we ever want to get into that, that's a whole other episode for sure.
Yeah, John.
I better do my research
on that. You should
do
your research
on that. Watched like 4 YouTube videos, 10 minutes each, so I'm not an expert.
Well, no one is because
it's not like true science.
Yeah.
It's just a guess, you know. Yeah.
Right, but I'd like to talk to Sam, your one guest, the geologist, and see where some of the dating on certain rocks and things can be totally accounted for.
Oh, yeah, for sure.
Yep. Yeah, but anyways.
It's very interesting.
It is very interesting.
What were we talking
about? So the family, the lineage, you're great, you know, coming from that area, so what does that all mean?
Well, you were asking me about the religion and politics. Yep. And so I just come from a family that's got a big religious background and a lot of politics.
Like traditional. Catholicism.
Yeah, absolutely. Yep. McDonald's coming from Ireland. I don't know the full story of how my grandparents' parents got here, but you know, we're very Irish family.
Oh yeah, and you're Catholic.
Absolutely. Catholic church in Watertown, and then going down to hang out. Growing up, my memory is going down to hang out with my Catholic nuns, my great aunts.
Oh, okay.
And
so,
my grandmother,
very much involved. Yep.
Margaret Mary McDonald's sisters. And the first one just passed away, Rita McDonald, God bless her soul, whatever that means.
Yeah.
And it was funny when she was passing, you know, and my dad had told me a cute story. She was like, I can't remember if my uncle asked her, but he said, "Will you get up there and you'd be hanging out with if you get up to heaven, say hi to Margaret Mary, their mom, my dad's and my uncle's mom." Rita goes, "If."
And she was a nun. If I ain't going.
If I get up. I just thought how cute that is.
Yeah,
in her end. If. And that just shows my family and those ladies and what they taught to us, just always have that humor and that light of life.
Yep.
And these ladies were everything. I mean, they're my God. You know, I mean, everybody talks about God and everything. This is my family. You know, I love my ancestors and I'll honor them to the day I'm not here. And these ladies and my grandmother were the most impactful thing in my life. And so you have this Catholicism edge to it, but then at the same time, these nuns were kicked out of the Catholic Church in Watertown. Not kicked out. They left.
No.
They couldn't preach the word of God. So they left. They went down to St. Stephen's in Minneapolis and became teachers and educators working, you know, serving the children.
Hmm.
And I remember going to Loaves and Fishes my whole life, serving the homeless because of them, and just learning that empathetic, is that the word?
Yeah, sure.
You know, way of life. And just... Yep. Yeah. You know, this is human experience is different than a lot of people can think it is.
So why were they forced to leave the church?
Well, no, they left. They chose to left.
They chose to left.
I say that in my mind.
Okay.
They were forced. Yeah. But in a way, were they? You know?
They didn't have had a choice
right.
but to leave.
Right. Yeah. You know, so in a way, I say that. And that's a whole other thing, so I won't get into religion. But... But, you know, they left the church and they became the most amazing servants for whatever they were serving. And it's just amazing to see. And I remember, this is real funny, growing up going down to their court cases because they'd get arrested at Honeywell for protesting against landmines. And these ladies were on the 35 Bridge and all the major highways protesting their whole life with my grandmother for against war. Until this day, their message is amazing. You can find them on YouTube at Four Sisters for Peace.
Okay.
And
for like the number four.
Yeah.
Correct. Yeah. Correct. Thank you. F-O-U-R, Four Sisters for Peace. I can't remember if it's a little four emblem, but it's a really cool YouTube video.
All right.
At, a documentary made on them. And I think my great uncle had something to do with it too. He might have done some filming. But more into my family too, you know. I got my great aunts, and then their brother KJ McDonald was a politician in Watertown, and his son, who you probably know, Sam, became mayor of Delano, Joe mm-hmm. McDonald, and so you got this dynamic of a right wing Republican, and then you got these servants of peace. And just if you can imagine that dynamic, it's really interesting. There was a play done on the nuns, Four Sisters, Four Peace in St. Paul in 2019. And I got to learn a little bit more about it and how that those family discussions probably went down and things like that, you know. And
interesting.
It was, yeah, to learn more about that.
Yeah, that's I feel like a lot of like younger, and I know a little bit about, you know, some of my grandparents and the, you know, very, very generalized stuff. Yeah. But definitely seems like you are very interested in like your relatives or had a big impact, you know, from, I mean, even like great aunt stuff. Like, yeah, I could,
right.
I could point one to one and say, yep, that was mine, but
I don't know if I could do that.
Yeah.
For sure. Other aunts, than that. Yeah. Great aunts. Probably not.
No. Well, yeah, I'd hope your aunts.
Yeah. Yeah. No, I mean, like I said, I just love my family extended and close. And, you know, like I said, with politics and religion, we all have our differences, but yeah. No matter if one believes anything, I just love everybody so much. And I'm so grateful for having this family and this dynamic, because I do. I know my great aunts very well. And they were like grandmothers to me too, you know. So it was just to know them that personally and have that relation with everyone was just such a, whatever you want to call it, like people call it a blessing. So I'm very fortunate, or, you know, in that, to have that dynamic with my family. Yeah.
So after you came back from Oregon, what was life like for Nathan then?
I wanted to share the sport, like I mentioned, of snow kiting with everyone. When I went out to Oregon, so the sport, you guys were kind of asking what the sport is like, and its origins come from Hood River, Oregon, and Maui, Hawaii, Kanaha Beach, right by the airport when you fly into Maui.
Never been. Have you been?
I've been once. I got very lucky. Yeah. I got very lucky and got to go to Hawaii. Yeah, so that was fun. And a friend of mine lived there, and we got to use some paddle boards, and I brought some kites, and I got to kite right on Kanaha, so it was kind of full circle.
Oh, yeah, neat.
Yeah, it's cool. I had driven out to Oregon in my 20s there instead of going to college, and packed up all my tile tools and headed out there. And
oh, so you were tiling at that point then?
I've been tiling since high school.
Okay.
Yeah.
So just work for a guy and learn the trade, or?
Yep. Just work for a few different people and learn the trade. And, you know, at that time, it wasn't serious. Like most young guys that are probably wanting to be skateboarding and snowboarding, it's just a paycheck.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yep. Yeah. But I liked it, and it was just something that I gravitated towards. I'd done landscaping and concrete work at first, and that was just kind of grueling and not appreciated. So just to get something that was like a little more appreciated and, you know, a little more gratifying to see your finished product too.
So when you were out in Oregon, were you doing that as just side work or while you were
absolutely
being a professional?
Well, yeah, right. Eating peanut butter jelly sandwiches, ramen down by the river in my van.
See, you skipped college, but that sounds like college. So you got to experience it.
You got all college experience, man.
Same dietitian.
Yeah.
Same food, yeah. Yeah, so, sorry.
How many years were you out there?
I was out there on and off. The first year, I lived there for like a year and then moved back.
Okay.
And getting pretty in-depth, the kiting. And the nice thing about where I lived was Hood River. Like I said, it was kind of like that mecca of kiteboarding in the United States. Are you guys familiar with the Pacific Northwest yourselves?
Yeah, I've been.
Been out to Portland along the coast. Many times, yeah.
There you go.
Yeah.
Cool.
My aunt lives out in Portland. So.
Perfect.
Yeah.
So, yeah, Portland. I mean, amazing city. I lived in St. John's for a little bit.
Sure.
And so just east there is the Hood River. Have you driven through there?
Yep.
Cool. And so that whole Columbia River Gorge in May.
Isn't it?
Yeah. Is like clockwork. And it just sucks. It is. It's majestic. This Pacific Northwest. I stayed around that area from Columbia River Gorge out to Portland, but I really wish I would have traveled more, but there's so much to see.
Yep. Did you make it up to Washington, Olympic National Park, or any of that?
No.
No.
That's what I'm saying.
How long were you there? 4 years?
So on and off, I've been out. I've gone out for, 11 years I've gone back and forth, but I never like really stayed out there because I come back every winter to keep teaching kiteboarding.
Okay.
Or I'm sorry, snow kiting here in Minnesota. Because our numbers in snow kiting grow in the winter, or just in the whole sport of kiteboarding, whatever you want to call it.
Nice. Mm-hmm. So while you're out there, I mean, did you meet people that you've like stayed in touch with, or was it kind of out on your own? And
yeah, no, definitely lifelong friends.
Yep.
And sorry, that's kind of what I was talking about. I'll talk more about other things, but I got a lot of. I don't stay focused, so if you can keep me focused here on what you're asking me. But yeah, no,
come on, John, stay focused.
I know, and I'm not the greatest at this, so.
I think you asked me a question, and
Who knows?
I'm probably diverting.
Nobody freaking knows.
Right. So what was the question?
Yeah, I honestly don't even know if there was a question. And we will get to that in the second part
of
the episode. Like yeah. It. Well, because it's going to be, I think it'll be a little bit of a lengthy conversation. So yeah, we'll get to this, what he's referring to with
good
the.
Good tease, good tease.
Yeah, oh, yeah, yeah, get you back for part two.
He's a professional.
Yeah. Sam and John may have met their match on who can talk the most here.
Oh, I don't know,
it's
man.
It's hard to get Nathan stuff out here.
Yeah, some of our other guests would give you a run for your money, I think.
I need to listen to more podcasts. But that's been great for, to listen to everyone.
Yeah, that's so great for the show. I mean, yeah.
Well, it's great for me. I can just sip on whiskey and listen to you. Yeah. There's nothing wrong with that.
Sam's down to bottom of the glass there. He's going to have to fill her up pretty soon here.
But yeah, no, you were asking about friends, and I mean, that was everything too. I mean, here I got another thing to show you. The reason I went to the Columbia River Gorge was because I met friends, and we talk about that lifestyle sport. When I got into the sport, it was through friends who had been windsurfing and just kind of learned of the kiting, and they said, hey, go check out Lake Waconia. So, you know, as you see, I like to talk. You just start talking to people.
Mm-hmm.
I met a guy named Mooney. He was the pilot for like Northwest Airlines at the time. And he's telling me about the kiting. And the first time I showed up at the beach in Waconia, and he showed me the kite, mentioned something about Hood River. And then I just kept going back to that beach in Waconia and meeting more people.
Yeah.
And then I met a few other people and then a few more people. And then you meet just more people. And through that, it's like a life lesson I've learned from not going to college. Life's all about who you know. And, you know, it's just so great. So I met one of my best friends to this day. His name is Alex Peterson. Now that guy is a professional. He's beyond mediocre. He is just a dynamic that's, I don't even know how to say. He's a bird, basically.
He's a bird.
This
prehistoric.
Man can fly. And he actually runs a company now that's called skybrothers.com. And I work with him a little bit for the kiteboard lessons and stuff too. And just, he's just one of my biggest mentors in the sport. And Alex had always went out to Hood River, and I knew that. And then some other friends have always went down to South Padre. So my buddies from high school that showed me the kite, we packed up their van, all of our stuff that we could hang out on a beach with. We drove to South Padre. We spent 2 weeks on the beach just being beach bums and learning the sports of kiteboarding and windsurfing. And it's a really cool place for kiteboarding in the United States. You have, like I said, Hawaii where it originated, the gorge in the Columbia River Gorge in Oregon where it originated. And I'll get back to why that's so good of a spot. But then on the East Coast, you know, any coastal spot is good. But then on the East Coast of the United States, you have North Carolina Hatteras. And that's a very popular spot for it. Kind of down into some of the other Carolinas. But right there in Hatteras, North Carolina, or Waves, North Carolina. Kitty Hawk, where Flight first took place with the Wright brothers. So this kind of cool thing, the people that who educated me, and I got my certification through. They're all based out of that Kitty Hawk. It's kind of cool out there to see like the full flights and that dynamic of things with professional air sports coming out of there. And then you got South Padre, as I was talking about, and anywhere from Houston down to South Padre Island. It's the windiest spot of the continental United States down there. So it's really windy. And that'll go back to the gorge. I was trying to say to Sam, from May until mid-September. It's like clockwork. The wind just starts. The eastern part of the gorge, or eastern parts of Washington and Oregon, are just so hot, they heat up the thermal from the Pacific. And it just
funnels
right down that Columbia River Gorge. So it's a really cool area that I asked you guys if you've been out there. There's so much to do. But I moved out there because of the kiteboarding and the snowboarding that I loved at Mount Hood. Palmer Glacier is open year-round in Mount Hood. So it was my dream, just watching snowboarding videos my whole life, to go to Mount Hood and snowboard all summer long. And just be in a t-shirt like you see in the videos. You're on a volcano. It smells just like sulfur.
Seems crazy.
It is. Yeah. It's bizarre.
Yeah, that sounds really fun. And not the snowboarding part of it, but the volcano. And,
yeah.
And,
well, did you say Olympic Park? Or did
Sam? Sam's done it all.
Okay.
Freaking 28 years old, and he's been to more places than God himself.
Well, like you said, you got to take the time to do it. You know, so I found the time a couple of times to take 3 or 4 weeks off of work or life or whatever, and just do it and accept the fact that you're going to lose out on some cash and whatever, you know. So yeah, Katie and I have done a trip around the western United States and saw all those states, Utah, Nevada, and then up the coast. And
awesome.
Yeah, it's perfect. And I suggest that to anybody.
And you went to the Mount Olympic?
Yep.
Cool. I want to go there. My brother had went there, but I hadn't got to go.
Yeah, Olympic National Park is huge, and it's really cool because there's all sorts of different areas in there. So there's like mountains, and then there's like rainforest, and there's the ocean, and there's, you know.
That's what I was going to say. I think it's got rainforest.
Mm-hmm. Cool. Sure does. Yeah, very cool. Really cool. Yeah. So explain the handouts again.
Thanks. So I got some handouts here for you from my good friend Alex, who I was talking about why I went why I went to Hood River. Like,
is that a picture of you with your legs spread wide open?
No.
Good crotch shot.
Good crotch shot.
Alex and some of his students, and he's doing paragliding.
Oh, yeah.
So kite surfing evolved off of other wind sports.
Yeah.
And why, when I keep saying back to Hood River and to Maui when it originated, they were also using stunt kites, which are just two-line kites. Any of your guests or anybody may have been traveling to a beach, and you just see people flying a kite on a beach, but it's not a one-line kite.
Mm-hmm.
It's actually a controlled kite with two lines, and those are called stunt kites. And stunt kiting has been big since the 70s.
And that's just trying to make it do neat things, make it, just more for appearance.
Correct.
Yeah, okay.
Yeah, I think. I think so. That's probably
put on little shows.
Yeah.
Make some beach money.
Well, and I'd imagine just as they are designing these wings or these kites back when, that they figured out, hey, let's put another line over here and see how to control
it. Yeah.
I have a friend from Utah, Blake Pelton. He has a kite that can fly in no wind inside a gym and stuff. And I still don't know how he does it.
What?
He works for another.
Do you run really fast?
You must run really fast.
Just the fastest there's guy in the world.
Some type of apparent energy.
That's so weird.
Yeah. So there's something.
I could barely get my single line Batman kite up in the air on a 40 mile. Just fucking dive right into the ground. That's busted.
Awesome. You got to run, John.
Yeah. But it was so sweet when you get that thing up there and just let her go. See ya.
Were you at the park in Silver Lake?
I don't know. Oh, probably at the softball field because
that's where Kyle and
fewer trees. Yeah.
Fly her baby shark kite.
Baby shark kite. Nice. I should get one of those.
Kites are a good time.
I say kids play. I don't see kites out.
I get them at Menards for a dollar.
Yeah, they're dirt cheap because it's nothing to them.
You got kids, John.
I know.
I don't know. Do your kids use kites?
Nope. I don't think they've ever flown one.
Get them a goddamn kite.
Well, John, let's go mushroom picking and fly some kites with our kids.
Yeah, let's do it.
I always loved flying kites as a kid.
I did, too. I never even thought of it as something to do now until Nathan brought it up. Thanks, Nathan.
Hey, no problem. Well, and that's one thing I love to share with people is the sport of flying kites stemmed from that. And so I tell everybody to learn this.
Yeah.
Get a small stunt kite or get just a flying kite that's a two-line kite that's a control kite, and you gain your hours on each size wing before you move up to the next. So before myself and before others that educated people, that's how people were kind of learning. build your way up in power, because the bigger square meters you have of a wing,
the more trying to control that thing,
the more pull and control.
So, John, start with the Batman one.
Yeah, do that one.
start
I'm pretty light, though. That thing might yank me around a little bit. Getting dragged on the gravel road.
Taking off.
Yeah.
So the certification for that, was it like, I mean, is it like sanctioned where there, it's like a national standard or universe or the world standard? Or
so they're at the time, and I'm not, you know, I've kind of out of the loop the last maybe 8 years since I've had a family on the education of the educators, but I know that there's the International Kiteboard Organization, and that's certifying people for international instructing. So if you guys wanted to go, obviously, you know, expat or whatever you want to call it, teaching in a different country or somewhere else, you'd need your IKO. And within the United States, you need your PASA, which is Professional Air Sports Association of America. And that's out of the Kitty Hawk, North Carolina there, like I was saying. And that's who I got certified with.
Is that a lifelong certification?
It's not, you gotta put in so many hours. Yeah, you gotta keep it updated and
have you
pay your dues. I haven't in the last five years.
Well, frick, who's gonna show me how to do this stuff?
I know. Well, you know, really it just comes.
Yeah, Alex.
Alex Peterson.
Alex, your buddy.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah. No, I can do it. I just it's all kind of on the back burner now for me as a business.
Okay.
Yeah. So I just teach word of mouth,
yeah,
and it's just kind of more private lessons now. Yeah,
that makes sense.
Yeah, my tile work is just overtaken.
All your time.
Yeah, yeah, exactly.
Such is life.
Yeah, exactly.
Freaking work.
But, you know, you got a billion-dollar business, and I don't even know what kiteboarding is, if it's even a million-dollar business.
Really?
It probably is.
Yeah, I suppose. I mean,
like maybe by like now.
Industry?
Right, correct.
Oh, I have no idea. I would guess it's more, but I don't know.
I don't even know. Because, like, my friend and I were talking yesterday, and it's like, I didn't ask him any of that stuff. He's a little more into the business side of things, but I don't even know if it's a million-dollar industry still. It probably is. But you'd think it'd have to be for where I see it. One thing that's gained a lot of traction in water sports is foil boarding. Hydrofoil.
Is that with the huge, long, what the hell is it, like, rudder-type thing? What's that called?
Like it's got like a
mast.
Okay, that goes way down.
I just learned that. You know, that's the technical.
Oh, okay,
it's like looks like you're basically flying out of the water.
Yeah, it's like a surfboard. Yeah,
how does that work? Is it just a big pump that's like
no? Picture an airplane underwater. The wings are fixed in positions.
Okay,
as it flows through the water.
Okay.
That the wings are holding you up correctly.
Oh, so it's just
I'm not a big winger. That's a term.
Okay.
He's a swinger.
Well,
I just pointed to John.
Oh.
For those of you listening.
Yeah. <He's not> annoying. That random guy in the corner? Get out of here.
My daughter loves swinging. We're still swinging January 3rd in Minnesota.
Wait a second. What? Huh? What are you talking about?
At the parks, baby. Underdog. The parks are still open.
Oh, okay. Underdog.
There's
underdog.
No freaking
snow. No, at home. I built her a new swing.
Oh, nice. Good
for you. Backyard. Yeah, it's pretty sweet.
It's pretty nice. Sweet.
I'm pretty proud of it.
It hasn't fallen down yet.
You know, I cut down a tree and I used half the tree and then an A-frame on the other side.
Oh, look at you.
Yeah, she's going to climb up being the tree creative. Into her new princess house this spring when I build that. So
jeez,
yeah,
what a guy.
Hey, thanks.
Katie and I just went for a walk the other day and there was a swing that's like 15 feet up in the air, and I was like, what the hell is that about? Because it's 15 feet up in the air.
Yeah, how are you getting
like,
up there?
The swing itself is only 6 feet down from like the limb.
Just seems wrong.
And I was like, what the hell is that?
Did giant live there?
What we decided was the tree grew up and the swing never got taken down. So the limb.
You think so?
I think so. I don't know what else it would be.
Is that how it works though?
Why wouldn't it?
Does that limb just keep going up?
Some trees.
Yeah. Some of them, no, right?
Yeah.
Some, yes, some, no.
I suppose, yeah, depending on what type.
On the species.
Yeah. What was it, oak?
No. I don't know.
Bur oak? White oak? Red oak?
It's probably ash. Fast. It's probably coming down
something
in 2 days.
Fast.
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
All right. That's enough of that stupid talk. We are actually going to take a pause on part one of this episode. We will be back in, for us, just a few minutes. But for you, listeners, next week with part two, where we're going to talk, we'll probably wrap up Nathan's lifestyle, action, sports, enthusiasm. Also, we'll get to what Nathan had discussed a little bit earlier about some of his memory issues and kind of what he experienced and why he's dealing with that. So, yeah, we'll close up part one here. Huge thanks to Nathan for joining us for part one. Everybody listening, make sure to tell your friends. Check us out on Facebook, Instagram. And if you know of anybody that wants to be in the show, feel free to reach out. For Sam, I'm John, and you've been listening to Mediocre from Minnesota.